So today's daf is daf pei. Thank you for joining. And we're dealing with, again, the amounts, the measurements of things that are taken out. So we know that your chayiv, you have to bring a karban chatas, you have to bring a sin offering if you mistakenly violate Shabbos, forgetting that the day is Shabbos or forgetting that this is a malacha. And it's only a malacha, it's only considered an act of carrying, which is significant from a private domain to a public domain, if you're carrying a prominent amount. So some item that's chashuv, that's meaningful. So we saw food that people eat. The minimum amount of food that's prominent would be the amount of a dried fig, a grogeres. What's the minimum amount of milk that's prominent? The amount of milk to fill a mouth and swallow. What's the minimum amount of honey that's prominent? The amount of honey to smear on a wound of a horse and thereby heal the horse. So we saw all these things are, what is the minimum amount? So now we're going to move on to other items and try to define what is the minimum amount of these items that is useful. And that amount which is useful, if somebody were to carry that amount out from the public domain to the private domain, they would be chayiv. Okay, that's where we start. We're on the very bottom of Ayin Tesmid Beis. The Mishnah said dyo. Dyo is black ink. Kedei lichtov, enough to write with the ink two letters. Again, why two letters? So as we've seen, that on the boards of the Mishkan, on the krushim, on the beams that would make up the wall of the Mishkan, they would have to write two letters. You know, put this beam next to this one and next to this one on this side. So Aleph and then Beis, and then the next one is Gimel. So you have to write two letters. So they would write the two letters on the beam to know where to place each beam, because each beam has a certain kedusha based on its placement. And so the minimum amount of writing is two letters. And therefore, if you carry two letters worth of ink, you are chayiv for carrying. So now the Gemara is going to discuss the question of really, how do you define two letters worth of ink? Is it wet ink? Is it dry ink? Is it ink inside the quill? Is it ink inside the inkwell? What's the definition of two letters? And this is a question that Gavriel brought up a couple of days ago. When you have an item in a container, does the container count for itself? And we say there's carrying on the container. Forget about the amount of apples, but there's the bag that holds the apples. And so the basic principle is the container is annulled to the item that it's carrying. The container doesn't count. It's considered just a part, and it's annulled to the item that it is carrying. So now the Gemara says like this. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Shte osios bidyo. This definition of two letters worth of ink would apply to two letters worth of dried ink, because you can put water in and then the dry ink would become moist ink. You could write with it. It would also be shtei osios pekulmus, two letters worth in the pen. They didn't have pens like we do. They used to have a feather, and they would cut the feather, and then you'd pour the ink in the feather, or they would take a reed and cut the reed and pour the ink in the reed. So the reed or the feather is called a kulmus. So if the two letters worth of ink are in the inkwell, I'm sorry, not in the inkwell yet, in the pen, in the reed, that's also chayiv. And finally, shtei osios bekalmarin, even if the two letters worth of ink are in the ink well, you're chayiv. What's the chiddush? Let's say you have less than two letters worth of ink in the inkwell. So then you would say, yeah, you should be chayiv for carrying the inkwell out from the house to the street, because the inkwell itself is a davar chashuv, a prominent thing. The answer is that no, even if this inkwell is a prominent thing, since the purpose of the inkwell is to hold ink, it's annulled to the ink. And therefore, only if the ink is two letters worth would this be considered carrying out the amount, which is a hotzah. Boy, Rava now asked a question. Os achas bidyo. What happened if you have one letter worth of ink, an os achas bekulmus, and one letter worth of ink is inside the pen, an os achas bekalmarin, and another letter worth of ink is inside the ink well. So basically the question is, would all these different amounts of ink be considered combining with each other? So we said you have to take out two letters worth of ink, but what happens if these amounts of ink are in different objects? One is dried ink, one is ink inside the ink well, one is ink inside the pen. Maybe the fact that you have these tiny drops of ink in all these different items separates the drops of ink from each other, and it's not considered that he carried out the full amount. Mahu, what's the law? Answers the Gemara, Teku, we do not have an answer. We don't have an answer. Teku, we don't know. Okay, so now we're going to get into a new question, which is going to take up quite a bit of time. And that is, how do we define hanacha? We know that in regards to carrying, you have to lift up the item. That's the akira. You lift it up in one domain. Maybe you lift it up in a private house. You lift it up on the street. You carry it out, and then you put it down into the public domain. That's the halacha of carrying. So now, Amar Rava, Rava asked the question. Hotzi shtei osios. What would the law be if somebody carries out two letters worth of ink? V'kasvan kishehu mahalich. And he writes the letters as he's walking. So normally we define hanacha, we define something coming to rest as being put down. Now it's at rest. But here he's still walking, and while he's walking, he's writing. So he has in his, let's say he has in his inkwell, or even better, he has in his pen two letters worth of ink. He has a little parchment, and he walks, he picks it up in the house, he walks out into the street, and while he's walking the street, he's scribbling on the parchment, and he writes his signature, ZR, on the parchment while walking in the street. Now, he hasn't stopped, the parchment hasn't stopped. But maybe, so you'd say, well, that's not a hanacha. It hasn't come to rest. But maybe it is a hanacha, because maybe we focus in on the ink, and the ink is not really moving anymore. The ink now is at rest on the parchment. Because maybe we have to redefine hanacha. Maybe what hanacha means is an item belonged to the house. He picked it up. He uprooted it from the house. Took it out into the street. And now he puts it down in the street. It belongs to the street. But when you write ink, the ink is no longer ink. Once you write it, it becomes part of the parchment. So the ink now belongs to the parchment. The ink is at rest. So maybe that's already considered a hanacha. That's considered placing it down, even though the movement is still ongoing, is still going. That's Rava's chiddush. Amar Rava. Rava said, "Hotzi shtei osios." If he takes out two letters worth of ink, v'kasvan, and he's writing the letters onto the parchment, kishuhu mahalech, while he's walking, chayev. Now he is chayev for that writing. Because ksivasan zuhi hanachasan. The writing is the placement of it down. The writing is the putting it down in its place. Rama Rava Rava taught further. Okay, now we're going to learn all about definitions of hanacha. Hotzi os achas. Let's say a person takes one letter worth of ink out from the private domain to the public domain. Vikasva. And he writes that letter when he's standing in the public domain. So we just learned the chiddush, that's considered a hanacha. The chazar, he then went back, v'hotzi os achas, and he takes out another letter worth of ink, the kasvan, he writes the second letter while he is walking in the public domain. Now already pater, now he's going to be exempt. My time a why? Be'idna da'apkele basraisa, at the time that he was taking out the second letter worth of ink, chaser la v'shiur de kamaisa. He's already missing the original amount. So here's another interesting point, right? If you follow this logic, that when you write something, that's considered putting the ink down. even though you're in movement and the parchment is in movement, but the ink now has come to a rest. That's the novel idea here. So then if you took one letter worth of ink out from the house and you wrote it when you were in the street, and then you went back to the house and took another letter worth of ink out from the house and wrote that letter down in the street, you didn't do a full shiur. You didn't do the full amount to be obligated in a karban. The full amount is carrying out a two letters worth of ink. You didn't carry out two letters worth of ink. You carried out half a letter, half the amount, and again you carried out half the amount. Now, even though it was all in one state of forgetting that the day is Shabbos, these are considered two separate acts. There was one akira of chatzi and a hanacha, and then another akira, another uprooting of half and a hanacha. So Howard asks, isn't the act of writing itself not permitted? Yeah, of course it's not permitted, but the act of writing would also be only if you write two letters. You know, if you write one letter, you did half the act of writing. The same way we're saying when you do one letter, you're doing half the act of placing it down. So the point here is we're focused now on the malacha of hotza'ah. But yes, this would be the malacha of ksiva too. If the nature of the sin is that the person forgot that the day was Shabbos, he would still only be bringing one karban chatas, because the core of the sin was one forgetting, the forgetting that the day is Shabbos. No, the feather doesn't count because the feather is secondary to the ink. So the feather is just considered part of the ink. Yeah, is he a question? No, okay. V'amar Rava. So now Rava goes further with these laws of hanacha, the laws of placing things down. Hotzi chatzi grogeres achas. We said that the definition of the amount of food for taking out is a grogeres, is a fig worth. That's food. So what happens if he takes out half a grogeres? V'hinicha, and he puts it down. V'chazar v'hotzi chatzi grogeres achas. And then he takes out another half of a fig worth. V'hinicha, and he put it down. So rishona nase kemisha kolta kelev. So that's also not a malacha. The malacha is to take out a full fig worth. He didn't take out a full fig worth. He took out half a fig and put it down, and he took out another half a fig and put it down. So rishona nase kemisha kolta kelev. That first act was as if a dog had grabbed it. Oshenisrafa, or as if it would have been burnt. Upater, and he would be exempt. So the first half is as if it was taken, you know, grabbed by a dog, or it was burnt. In other words, he didn't do a full act of hotzah. The full act of hotzah is to take out a full fig worth. He took out half a fig worth, put it down. So once he puts it down, that ends that act. Then he takes out another half a fig worth, put that down. Too late. He's going to be potter. He did half of a malacha. Ask the Gemara of Amai, why do you say he's potter? Hamancha, but half the fig is still here. Answer the Gemara, Achikamar. This is what it means. Im kadam v'igbia rishonah, when he takes out the second half of a fig. He picks up the first half that he already taken out, kodem anach hashnia, before he puts down the second half. Then nasis vishona kamisha niklatosh nisrafa. Then the first half is as if it was burned by a fire or caught by a dog. Upater, and he's exempt because he didn't do a full act of malacha. So Amarava Rava said, what about the following case? Hotzi chatzi grogeres. He takes out half a fig worth of food, v'inicha, and he puts it down. V'chazar, then he went back. V'hotzi chatzi grogeres. He takes out another half a fig worth of food. He just doesn't put it down. He'evira derech aleha. He passed this half a fig over the first half a fig. So we know there's all sorts of halachos where sometimes something is in the air, but halacha considers it on the ground. There's something called lavud. If the item is within three tfachim of the floor of a public domain, it's as if it's in the floor. We learned this in Masechet Sukkah. Let's say you're supposed to have schach. What happens if you have a gap between two parts of the schach of less than three tfachim? That gap doesn't count because of lavud. It's all filled in. So the same thing could be here. What's going on here? He didn't actually put it down, but he's holding this half a fig over the first half a fig. Says the Gemara, chayev. So now the two halves combine, and he's chayev. Asks the Gemara, amai, but he didn't put it down. Alo nach, he didn't put it down to rest. Answer the Gemara, kagon shevira toch shlosha. He's holding it within three tvachim of the floor, and since he's holding this second half within three tvachim of the floor, it's considered on the floor. Aye, says the Gemara, v'amar Rava, but Rava's going to tell us later, in about 10 days. Toch shlosha l'rabbanan tzarech hanachal gabe mashu. According to the Rabbanan, even when something is within three tvachim of the floor, it's not considered literally at rest unless it's also resting on a peg, resting on a twig. It's got to be at some rest. And it's more a low kash, it's not a contradiction. Kan bezore kan b'mavir. When Rava said it has to be on some level of rest to be within three tvachim, considered on the floor, that's when you're throwing something. So when you're throwing, your hands aren't holding it. So then it has to be on a twig to be considered on the floor. But if you're not throwing something, if you're literally carrying it in your hand, then as long as it's within three tvachim, that's already considered on a peg of some sort. It is on some sort of a twig, and then it is considered on the floor. Tana Rabbanan lived in a braisa. Talking about, again, this question of dividing up an act. And if you divide up an act, it's not a malacha. Hotzi chatzi grogeris. Let's say a person takes from the house to the street half a fig worth of food. Then he goes back to the house, still forgetting that the day is Shabbos. Vahotzi chatzi grogeris. And he takes out another half of a fig worth from the house to the street. Behelam echad. In one state of forgetting. The whole time he forgot that the day is Shabbos. Chayev. So now he would have to bring one carbon. However, if b'shtei ha'alamos, if after he took out the first half of a fig, he then remembers, oh, the day is Shabbos, I shouldn't be doing this. Then he forgets again that the day is Shabbos, he takes out the second half of a fig. So the fact that there was a remembering in between divides the two actions. He didn't do a full act of taking out a full fig, and therefore he was going to be exempt. He's pater. Reb Yossi says, Behelam echad l'rishus echad chayev. Even if the whole time that he took out the two halves, the two actions of taking out, he was forgetting that the day was Shabbos, it was one state of forgetting. If he kept taking it out, l'rishus echad, to one domain, chayev, he is chayev. L'shtei rishuyos. But if he took out two domains, then he'd be pater. So that's an interesting case, right? The guy forgets that the day is Shabbos. He goes into the house, he takes half a fig worth of food, and he takes it out of the house, out into the street. Then he forgets, he's still forgetting that the day is Shabbos. He goes into a house on the other side of the street, he takes from that house, and he goes to a separate Rishus HaRabim, right? So let's take, if I live on Chestnut Street, right? So the case is, I picked up half a fig worth, forgetting that the day is Shabbos, there's no Eruv. I carried half a fig worth from my house and put it down on Chestnut Street. I come back into the house. I'm still forgetting that the day is Shabbos. I pick up half a fig worth. I carry it through the backyard and then through the Lissauer backyard and I put it down onto Cedar Street. So because it's two separate Rishus HaRabims, so again, that divides up the act, even though it's all while he's forgetting that the day is Shabbos. But it's the two separate public domains, and each one was only half a fig worth. So therefore, it's two acts. Each act was less than the shear. So he's potter. He doesn't have to bring a carbon. That's what Rava is saying. So again, I'm sorry, it's what Rabbi Yossi is saying. Let's read it again. Tanu Rabbanan Lutin Abraisa. Hotzi chatzi grogeris. A guy takes out half a fig worth. And he takes out another half of fig worth. Behelam echad, if the whole time he's forgetting that it's Shabbos, he doesn't remember in between. Chayev, it's considered one act. He has to bring a carbon chatas. That's the chachamim. B'shtei alamos, if he remembered in between that it's Shabbos, then it's two acts, and each act is less than the shear, less than the right amount. He doesn't have to bring a carbon. That's the chachamim. Rabbi Yossi says, behelam echad, even if the whole time he was forgetting that it was Shabbos, If it's lirishus achas, if the two acts of half a fig were both to the same street, then he's chayiv. L'shtei rishuyos, but if it's to two streets, to this street and to that street, then he's pater, then he's exempt. Amar Rabba. Okay, so now we get into the question of what would divide up streets. So Amar Rabba, Rabba says, Hushi yeshchiv chatas beinehem. To divide the streets, to say this is one public domain and that's another public domain, you have to have in between the streets a private house where you to take from the street and put into the private house, your chayav achatas, for that's hotzah, that's hachnasa, taking from the public domain into the private domain. So that would be the only type of thing that could break up two streets. Avol karmelis, but if what you have in between the two streets is the area that's not public and not private, let's say it's an area that's 4x4, it's surrounded by a fence, but the fence is not 10 tvachim tall. The fence is only 5 tvachim tall. Or you have an area that's a platform, and the platform is 5 tvachim tall. So, you know, these are areas that are not public domains, not private domains. If what you have between the two public domains is a karmelis area, that's not enough to divide it. It's all considered one domain. And then the half you took to this side, the half you took to that side is two halves that both went into the same public domain, and you'd have to bring a karban chatas, you'd have to bring a sin offering. Abaya says, afilu karmelis, even if what's between the two public domains is a karmelis, it breaks up the two public domains. Avol pislalo, let's say you have a street, and to divide the two sides of the street, you had some, think of Ben Yehuda Street, right? So Ben Yehuda Street is a pedestrian street. So to try to prevent cars from going onto Ben Yehuda Street, at the top of the street on Rehov King George, you have pitch, tar. And if you'd want to drive onto Ben Yehuda Street, you couldn't because Ben Yehuda Street is elevated and they put the Jerusalem stone all along Ben Yehuda Street to prevent cars from driving down and people should walk. That's why they made it that way. Right, or now they made Rehov Yafo into a pedestrian street. So they put bricks all along Rehov Yafo. Everything else is pitch, so it's smooth for the tires of the car. And here you have bricks, so it becomes pedestrian. So if you wanted to break up a street, break up a public domain, they would take wood and they would, you know, carve the wood and make all sorts of nice engravings in the wood. So it's now uncomfortable for the animals to walk on the wood. And let's say the wood is 2 inches tall or 5 inches tall, or whatever. It's a 3 tvachim tall. So this is called a pisla. The pisla is to turn the street into an area, you know, to divide it. But if you'd have a pisla, it's not very tall. It's within 3 tvachim. That wouldn't divide the street. It's all considered one public domain. So if you carried out half a fig worth to one side of the pisla, then you carried out the other half a fig worth to the other side of the pisla, that's still considered one public domain. But Rava said, afilu pisla, even the little board of wood with all the engravings that are put there to make it harder for the animals to walk on it, to make it harder for the wheels to walk on it, that which would make it into a pedestrian street, doesn't divide up the public domain, because Amar Rava, Rava's Latame, Rava's consistent. I'm sorry, Rava says the pisla does divide the public domain. Rava's consistent. To Amar Rava, Rava used to say, Rishus Shabbos, Rishus Gitin Damya. We define what is a domain in regards to Shabbos from the way we define what is a domain in regards to a get. We know that if a husband wants to divorce his wife, so he has to put the get into her domain. So he can put it into her hand, or he can put it into her chatzer, into her courtyard. Now there's a problem. Whatever a wife owns, the husband owns. So how does he put it into her courtyard? So he can say to his wife, okay, I'm giving you my courtyard. My courtyard now belongs to you. And now that it belongs to you, if I throw the get into it, now the get came to you. So the Gemara in Gittin says, what happens if a guy says he wants to divorce his wife? He says to his wife, listen, it's over, it's finished, we're getting divorced. I'm giving you the get. Now, I can't hand deliver the get. He doesn't want to hand deliver the get. He doesn't like her anymore. So he says to her, I'm going to throw the get at you. That doesn't make work. If it throws it at her, she's not divorced. So he says, I'm going to throw it into the courtyard. Doesn't work because the courtyard belongs to him. He says, the courtyard is yours. I'm giving away my courtyard. The courtyard is yours. Now in the courtyard, let's say he has this little this little pisla. He has this piece of wood that they put on the floor with the engravings, like they raised the floor of Rehov Ben Yehuda for their purposes. It's decorative. So he throws the get and falls on the pisla. He had given the courtyard to her. Is she divorced? She's not divorced, because the pisla is considered a separate domain. So just like in regards to the laws of Gittin, the pisla is a separate domain. Therefore, in regards to Shabbos, the pisla is also a separate domain, enough to separate the two public domains, so that if he carries half a fig worth from the house into one side of the pisla, and half a fig worth from the house to the other side of the pisla, it's considered two separate acts. And since each act was less than the full amount that would create an obligation, he doesn't have to bring a karban chatas. Paul, if you could just make me a host for a second, I'll put up the picture from the diagram book of these different items. Or spotlight. Okay, great. So here we go. Okay, let's go to speaker view. Okay, and here. Everyone can see, right? If you have houses on two sides and you have a house in between and a public domain on one side and a public domain on the other side, so that was the first opinion. To divide up the public domain, you need to have a house in between the two public domains. The second opinion said you could even have a karmelis between the two public domains, but the pisla, this is the pisla here. The pisla, as you can see, is like a wooden thing that they would put to divide up a street. You'd have this side of the street and you'd have that side of the street. So if he carried out a little bit, half of a fig worth to one side of the street and half a fig worth to the other side of the street, according to the opinion that a karmelis divides a public domain, a pisla would not. But according to the last opinion, the same way a pisla is considered a separate domain in regards to a get, that's the bottom picture on the page, where a guy gave a courtyard to his wife, and then but he didn't give the pisla to his wife, and he threw the get and it landed on the pisla, it's considered landing on his domain, not on her domain, and she is still not yet divorced. So just like in regards to Gittin, the same is true in regards to, question, David, Shabbos. Yeah, David, a question. Right.
But in the other example, the pisla is meant to separate between two different rishus of rabbim.
Right.
So it's like, even if you had the pisla inside the chatzer, everything in that domain is still included.
Right. Apparently, the same way we find in Gittin, the pisla is considered davar chashuv la'atzmo, even though it's a small thing, but it's not the floor. It's a little bit up above the floor. So he gave her the chatzer, he gave her the floor. He didn't give her that which is above the floor. He didn't give her his flower pot. So the same way in regards to Gittin, it would be considered that he just put it in his own stuff. He didn't yet put it into her stuff. In regards to Shabbat, it can divide up the Rishut HaRabim. It's not considered just a part of the Rishut HaRabim. All right, so now we move out of the definitions of Hanacha and back to the theme of the chapter, which is so difficult for us because it's hard for us to relate to all these items. You know, how much of an item is considered prominent that if you carried out that amount from the private domain to the public domain, you would be chayev. So we said, you know, water, it's enough to dilute the cream for the eye. Honey to put on the back of a horse. Milk to swallow. So now we talk about other items. How much of these, what's the minimum amount of an item that's meaningful that we said, oh, you carried out a meaningful amount? No, now you're chayev. So what's the meaningful amounts? So we said in the Mishnah, kohl. Kohl is eyeliner, blue eyeliner. Kedei likhol ayin achas. The minimum amount of blue eyeliner, so a woman puts on blue eyeliner, it's to put on one eye. So ask the Gemara, ayin achas, one eye. Halo kachli, women don't put eyeliner on one eye. They put eyeliner on both eyes. So the minimum amount should be enough eyeliner for two eyes. How can you say a prominent amount is enough eyeliner for one eye? What woman's going to put on eyeliner on one eye? Amar Rav Huna answered, Shekain tznuos kochlos ayin achas. The very modest women, they only put the eyeliner on a single eye. So this, I guess the very modest women were more extreme than the women of the Taliban. The women of the Taliban, they cover the whole thing, but they leave out the two eyes. Right? What is the thing called? Baruch knows what that thing is called. Burqa, a burqa. They cover the whole thing, the whole face, and they leave out the two eyes. The very modest women in the times of the Talmud, they would only leave out one eye. They would cover the whole body, plus the forehead and the nose and the mouth and one eye. They just have one eye open to be able to see. So that one, when they go out into the markets, the Gemara is going to say, you know, they lived in very promiscuous places. People would make fun and laugh at them, and, you know, they would try to flirt. So the women were so modest, they'd cover the whole face and leave only one eye uncovered. So that one eye, they put on the blue eyeliner. So you see, the minimum amount of blue eyeliner that's prominent is enough for one eye, because the very modest women, that's the only part of their body that's exposed to the sight of other people when they go out into the street. So Meisu, the Gemara says, but I'll challenge this. We learned in a Braiser, Reb Shimon Elazar, Omer, Reb Shimon Elazar says like this, Kol, blue eyeliner, Imler Refua, if the use is for healing, there's some type of eye problem and you're using it to heal the eye, then the minimum amount that's prominent is enough to put eyeliner on one eye. But if it's to decorate, if it's jewelry, it's got to be on both eyes. It can't be just enough for one eye. No woman goes out with only one eye. He answered the Gemara, Tirgum Ahil, Abreid Reb Shmuel Bar Achmeini. It depends on the place. Kitanya Ibi Iranios. That was talking about the women from the small villages. So in the small villages, Rashi explains, in the peasant, you know, out in the countryside, when there are not a lot of people, and people are farmers, so there they have a higher religious level. So the men are not flirting with the women. So the women there don't need to cover up their faces. So they go out with faces uncovered. So if you go out with faces uncovered, so the minimum amount of cosmetics is for two eyes, not for one eye. But the Mishnah, which said that the minimum amount of cosmetics that's prominent, blue eyeliners for one eye, was not talking about people who live in the villages. It's talking about people who live in the cities. You live in the cities, you go in the street. In the street, there are lots of people. A lot of people are disrespectful or are flirting. So then the women would cover everything. They'd cover everything and only leave out one eye to see where to go. So then the minimum amount of blue eyeliner that's prominent is enough to color one eye. Okay, one second. I think we saw a question here. Let me see. Question. Why would the very modest women put any eyeliner on? So, good question. I think it was to prevent attention. In other words, if there's no eyeliner, so then it looks different than every other woman who does have the eyeliner, and it draws attention. And the idea that they wanted to do was to sort of escape notice and not have the Yoshve Kronos, the men who sit in the market, you know, saying things to them. You know, I grew up in Washington Heights. We used to have on the street corners these fellows. They sat there all day, you know, playing cards, sometimes racing chickens against each other, you know, and they would make comments. When people would walk by, when my sisters would walk by, they would make comments. So that's what the Gemara is talking about. You know, the people who live in the urban areas and you have all these, you know, unfortunate low lives around, they make comments to the women. So the women would be very, very modest. They would cover everything up and they didn't want to draw any attention. But if you live out in a yeshuv, right, in a settlement where things are quiet, so, you know, it was different. There it was different. Okay, that's what the Gemara is saying. Next, let's go further. Then the Gemara says, Shava, what about wax? Kedei litain, how much is the minimum amount? Kedei litain al pi nekev katan, enough to put on a little hole. Tana, we learned in a braisa, kedei litain al pi nekev katan shel yain, enough to put on a little hole of a wine decanter. So it's a tiny little bit of wax that's also prominent, and there, because you could have a use for it, you could put it on the wine decanter. So if you carried out that amount of wax from the house to the street, you'd have to bring a karban chatas. Devek. Now what about glue? They lit him barosha shafshaf, enough glue to put on the top of the scarecrow. In other words, you have hunters, they were trapping pigeons. They used to take a board, put it onto the floor, and then they'd put another board across, and on top of the board, they would put a lot of glue, and they'd drop, you know, seeds. So the pigeons would come for the seeds, and they'd get stuck in the glue. So that's the minimum amount of glue that's meaningful, the amount of glue that the hunter puts on the top of his stick to catch the birds. We're talking about the amount of glue that's put on the top of the cross beam that's on the lower beam of the hunters. All right, Zephas v'gafris, pitch and tar, what's the minimum? K'dei lasos pinekev, to fill in a hole. Tana, we learned in a braisa, k'dei lasos nekev katan. In other words, enough, let's say you want to fill the top of a container, and then you want to be able to make a hole in that top. Let's say you have a container with little chips of silver powder. So you want to seal the hole, and then you want to make a hole in the seal to be able to shake out little chips one by one. So that's that tiny amount, the amount to make the hole, to be able to now make a little hole in it to get the chips of silver to come out. That's the minimum amount of tar that if you carried out that amount from the house to the street, you are chayav. Harasis, what about ground cinder blocks? K'dei lasos pikur, enough to fix the opening of the smelting oven. So the smelting oven has tremendous heat. You want to insulate the opening. So you take the billows and you stick the billows into the oven, and billows are like an accordion. You open them and shut them to blow oxygen, to blow wind into the oven, to heat up the oven so that it's very hot to smelt the metal inside of it. And when you do that, you're worried that there's going to be air on the sides. So you want to fill in the sides of the hole to make sure that there's no air getting out. So that you would take ground cinder blocks and put it on the sides of the hole. Again, let me share with you a picture of it so it becomes clearer. So you see here, they would have a smelting oven. They would take the billows and they would pump air into the oven to heat it up. But the problem is that the edge of the billows and the hole, there might be some space between the hole and the edge of the billows. So they would fill up that space with like a mud, something to insulate it so that you don't have any air escaping. So this little black circle, that's the mud. That's the harasis for the k'dei lasos pikur. Okay, so going back to the harasis k'dei lasos pikur. So to fix the opening of the smelting oven. P is the opening of kur of the smelting oven. So the Gemara says, Lemeimer, does this... So we actually had an argument in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda said it was enough, the minimum amount of this ground cinder blocks is not the amount to fill in the hole, to insulate the hole of the billows, but rather the minimum amount is to make the base, to make the legs of the oven, of the smelting oven. So maybe the Shuddah Rebbe Yehuda Nafish, says Rebbe Yehuda, the lenient one, and he says the minimum amount is something larger than what the Chacham said. We know that generally in all these different measurements of what's a minimum amount, the sages were more lenient. The time of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yudom, Rabbi Yudom says, in regards to a reed, enough to take, a little strap to measure the size of a shoe for a minor, says the Gemara. Ema, why don't you say, k'dei lasud pitput kiraktana. Maybe it's enough So you have to say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not that Rabbi Yehuda says enough to make that leg of the oven, but rather to fix the leg of the oven, just to put a little bit of concrete around that leg of the oven, which is obviously, you know, if there's some cracks in it, it's a tiny, tiny amount. And that's even less than the little bit of concrete that might go into the hole of the oven. So let me just show the picture again. Ellie, how do I go back here?
Speaker view.
Speaker view. Okay, speaker view. Okay, and now this would be Rabbi Yehuda's picture. So it's just a tiny little bit of concrete to fill in some cracks, and that already is prominent, and that already one would be chayiv for taking out that amount. Okay, now skipping the parentheses next, now on payment bays. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Mishnah, Hamotzi Seyar, somebody who carries out hairs. So what's the minimum amount of hairs that make it meaningful? Enough hair to put into the mud to help make the mud mix better. Tit, what about mud? Lasos pikur shel tzorfei zahav, to fix the hole of the smelting oven of those who are making gold. Again, it's the same thing as we said before, that they would put in these insulators into the holes so that when the billows went in, there was no space between the opening of the billows and the hole and the oven, and that would increase the heat. So that's again a tiny, tiny amount. Sid, what about concrete itself? So we said that concrete was kidei lasod enough to use the concrete on a young girl. So tana lenten a braisa, what's that minimum amount? Kidei lasod etzbak tana shebabanos, enough to put concrete on the little finger of a young girl. So girls don't like to have hair on their skin. So they used to put concrete on the skin and then pull the concrete off and then that way pull the hair out. So the minimum amount of concrete that's prominent is the amount of concrete to put on the little pinky of a young girl to take off the hair that's on her skin. So now we talk about hair and taking off hair from skin. When you have a young girl whose body has matured, so she has two pubic hairs, but she hasn't yet reached 12 years of age. The daughters of the young girls, toflos osan basid, they used to, the daughters of the poor, I mean, the poor girls who have this hair that they don't want to have, they would cover it with concrete and thereby pull out the hairs. Benos Ashirim, the daughters of the wealthy girls, wealthy women, wealthy men, I mean, Toflos Osan Besolas, they used to put on the hair a mud, a paste that was made of fine flour, and with that pulling out the hairs. Ubnos Malachim, whereas the daughters of aristocracy, Toflos Osan Beshemen Amor, they used to, you know, mix in the special Shemen Amor oil, and that way pull out the hair. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Shishach Adashim b'Shemen Amor, that Esther, to soften off her skin, had 6 months in the special oil. My Shemen Amor, what is Shemen Amor? Rav Huna bar Chiya Amar, that this special oil that softened up the skin was Satakas. So Satakas, it's not clear to me what it is. I saw some say Shemen Afar Simon. What does Art Scroll say Satakas is?
Perfumed oil.
So I guess they don't know what it is either. Okay, satakas. Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abraham Shema Zayin Shlohei Vishlish. It's oil, olive oil from olives that didn't grow a third. It was very fresh olives. Tanya Lundin Abraiser, Rabbi Yudom Rabbi Yudah says, and pekinon is a certain type of oil that you cannot use for the karban minchas. So what is anpekinon? It's shemen zayish lo evi ashlish. It's olive oil that hasn't yet. It's from olives that didn't grow a third yet. V'la masach and osa. Why would they put it on? Shemesher es haseyar, because it makes the hair fall out. Uma adines habasar, and it makes the skin and flesh delicate. Rav Bibi Avalei Brata. Rav Bibi had a daughter. Tafla Ever Ever. So he put the concrete on her, limb by limb. V'shakal ba. And because he had removed so much hair from her, her skin looked so beautiful, so he got a very nice dowry. He got through her arba mea zuzim, 400 zuz, from a man who very much wanted to marry this very beautiful woman, the daughter of Rav Bibi. There was this Gentile in Rav Bibi's town. So he also had a daughter. He figured, well, if Rav Bibi's daughter got such a nice dowry because Rav Bibi used the concrete to remove the hair off of her skin, you know, imagine what I'll get if I can remove the hair off of my daughter's skin. But he didn't do it like Rav Bibi. Rav Bibi did it limb by limb. Tafla b'chad zimna, he smeared the concrete on her in one moment. You know, the whole body with concrete all at once. Umesa, she died. Amar said, then he said, Kato Rav Bibi Librati. Rav Bibi killed my daughter. He blamed the Jew. That's what happens. The non-Jew does whatever he does, and yet they blame the Jew. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said, Rav Bibi deshati shichra. Rav Bibi, who drinks, drank beer. Then Bayim Benasi Tifla. Then his daughters needed the concrete to remove the hair off of their skins. But we don't drink any beer. Our daughters don't even need any smearing to remove any hair that is on them. Okay. So now going back to Sid, concrete. So Rav Yehuda says the amount of concrete that's prominent is not the amount to smear on a pinky of a young girl. It's k'day lasud kalkul. Enough concrete. What's that a question? Oh. What was this? Why would Rav Nachman say this? Kind of Lashon Hara. I don't think it's Lashon Hara. I think Rav Nachman is saying that, you know, instead of having a problem and solving it, you could prevent having a problem. He said, so Rav Bibi solved a problem. But even better is to, you know, watch the diet and then no one even has the problem in the first place. So I think Rav Nachman's trying to teach a lesson, and the way of the sages in general is to be harsh with each other, to push for great achievements, as the Chavos Yair teaches us. And so I think he said this sort of, this dig against Rav Bibi to teach a lesson to Rav Bibi and to the students that, you know, prevention is even better than a cure. So yeah, you found a cure, but even better would have been not to have needed it. And so if you would have watched your diet before you would have conceived the children, then they never would have needed even this prevention.
But then why is it a shiur then?
What do you mean by a shiur?
The lime that you would put on the little, right?
That's not what Rav Nachman's talking about. Rav Nachman is off on a tangent. He's not talking anymore about the shiur. The shiur was the chachamim. No, it was a normal practice. But Rav Nachman was saying, you don't even need to do it. If you watch your diet before you conceive your children, you won't even need to use this practice. So his point is, I think his point is, in general, let's prevent the problem from starting versus having a problem and then trying to solve it once we're stuck in the middle of it. So now, but going back to Hilchos Shabbos now talking about the shiur, Rabbi Yehuda says that amount is not the prominent amount. The prominent amount is k'day lasud kilkul. Enough to do the kilkul. So my kilkul. So what is this kilkul? And then Rabbi Nehemiah says, not a kilkul, but enough to do the andifi, you know, to put the concrete on the andifi. So Amar Rav, Rav explained, these are different, you know, if they wanted to remove hair, there were different desires of which hair to remove. Like some women wanted to remove some of the hair here on the side so that, you know, it would be braided nicely. And then there were other women who wanted to remove the hair over here, like where we have peos. They wanted to remove that hair. So these are different questions of, Rabbi Yehuda says the minimum amount is not for a finger, you know, the hair for the finger, like the hair over here. That's too small. Rabbi Yehuda says the minimum amount is the women who put in the little pieces of concrete to remove the hair over here on the sides who want to have, you know, for their beauty. And, you know, tzidah. And Rabbi Nehemiah is a little bit more lenient. He says, no, the minimum amount is not the little bits of concrete that are put here to make the hair, you know, thinner. It's the little bit of concrete that's put over here, you know, like to remove the facial hair, to remove the beard that might be growing in. So that's a larger amount. So again, these are questions. What's the minimum amount? Again, the minimum amount is whatever is useful. What is useful? What is normal? So we have your three opinions. The Chacham say the minimum amount is to remove a little bit of hair from a finger. Rebita says that's too small. What's prominent is the amount that would be used to, let's say, clean up the hair over here. And Rebbi Nechemya says, no, it's the amount to clean up the hair over here, the hair where the payos would go. So it's all questions. What Rebbi Yehuda is more lenient? For him, the minimum amount is larger. Rebbi Nechemya is even more lenient than that. So Gemara now asks, Lamemra, are you telling me, did you Rebbi Yehuda nafish? Rebbi Yehuda is more lenient, he has a bigger amount. Didn't we see in regards to the reeds that the Chachamim had the larger amount? So the Gemara says, really, this amount to put a little bit of hair to clean up to put a little bit of concrete over here to clean up the temples of the hair, that's even less than the amounts of concrete needed to take off the hairs on the finger. But Nafish Midir Rebbi Nechemya, it is a little bit more than Rebbi Nechemya. Ask the Gemara, I'll challenge you. We learned Abu Rebbi. Rebbi said, Nirin Dibri Rebbi Yehuda Bechavut. I agree with Rebbi Yehuda with the concrete that has a lot of water. And I agree with Rebbi Nechemya Bebeitzes Hasid with the concrete that doesn't have so much water and has more lumps. V'isal Kedai Techna, if you're going to tell me Tzido Bas Tzida, that the issue is, if you're going to tell me that the issue is about the... the sides of the hair, the temples. So then, idiv idi chavut, both of those things, you need to use the concrete that is all smooth with water. Elam Reb Yitzchak, Reb Yitzchak explained, Ami Debir Reb Ami, the students of Reb Ami explained, when Ravi Nechemya says that the amount of concrete is the amount for andifa, he's referring to a certain type of a kettle. This was an earthenware kettle that had two openings, one on the top and one on the bottom. When you wanted to fill it up, you would seal up the bottom opening with concrete. So according to Rebbi Nechemya, that's the amount of concrete that's prominent. And Rebbi says, if it's thick concrete, I would agree with you in terms of that. So Maaskefla, Rav Kahana said, understand, v'chiyadam osam osav anperos, is a person going to make his money just go to waste? If you're going to fill up a kettle with hot water, you're going to fill up the hole with this concrete, the hot water is going to melt the concrete and all the hot water will leak out. So therefore, El Amar Rav Kahana said, when we're saying tiny amounts of concrete, it's the amounts of concrete that are needed for the shnassos, for the protrusions on the measuring cup. And on the measuring cup, you'd have, one little, piece of concrete that would show, okay, this is half a cup. Another piece of concrete further up, this is a full cup. Another piece of concrete up, this is three cups. So those little chunks of concrete, that's the prominent amount that were you to take that out from the house to the street, you'd be chayiv. In the Mishnah, shnasos hayu behin, in the hin measuring cup that was used to measure the oil and the wine and the Beis HaMikdash, there were these protrusions made out of concrete to say, ad kan lapar, to fill up this cup till here, till this first protrusion for the wine for the bull, ad kan till here la'ayil for the ram, ad kan la'kevesh until here for the sheep, says the for the sheep carbon. Ask the Gemara, another opinion. Iba Yisem, another alternatively, what did Rebbi Nechemya mean when he said that the amount of concrete is the amount for andifa, my andifa, aputa? That's for the amount of concrete that people put on the forehead. So on the forehead, you're not putting concrete to remove hair. You're just putting concrete in order to basically make the skin a little redder and make it look nicer. And so that's all that it's, according to him, that's the minimum amount. This is like the story of this person from the Galilee who came to Bavel, to Amrule. They said to him in Bavel, Kum drosh lanu b'maisa merkava. Why don't you teach us the secrets of Kabbalah? Teach us the first chapter of Yechezkel, where Yechezkel teaches the different parts of heaven and the different angels. Teach us the Kabbalah. Teach us the secrets of how God runs the world. Amalu, he said to them, Edrish l'chuk yadar shabbi nechemya l'chevre. What do you want me to teach you the way Rabbi Nechemya taught his friends? Nafka Arisam in Kotel, when he was teaching his friends, a hornet came out of the wall, umachta bandife umis, and hit him on his forehead, and he died. In other words, you see that the word andifi means forehead. So maybe when Rabbi Nachem, you said concrete for the forehead, it means a tiny amount of concrete that's just rubbed into the forehead to make the skin look better. And some say, so his friend said about to him, Mindi le dali, dali, from his own, that's what happened to him. Here he was teaching the secrets that he's not supposed to teach, and that's why the hornet came out and hit him in the forehead. But bottom line, we're just quoting that story to learn that the meaning of the word andifi is forehead. And maybe when Rabbi Nechemya says the amount of concrete that's prominent is the amount of the andifi, it means the amount that's put on the forehead to make the skin look nicer. Okay, ad kan daf pei. Bezus Hashem will